What was that name for dad?
That was Dickerson Naylor Hoover.
Naylor Hoover. Which is like, man, it's like you're edging next to like insult, you know? You're just edging. Like, you know something's there.
You just know that meme of the kid.
It's kind of like the LaCroix of names, you know, like it's real close to tasting like something.
Welcome back to the Trilateral Troika. This is Steve along with the other Steve.
Hi.
And Ryan.
Somebody tried to make the case for Ricky Pearsall getting shot in San Francisco. Tried to blame it on Kamala Harris at work. And I think I laughed for a good solid 45 seconds straight. Like, not even exaggeration. Away from this person, so they didn't realize I was mocking them. But
so this person's of the lighter persuasion of skin?
I mean,
like, what is she? Now, let me ask you a question. Do they have an accent?
No accent.
Surprisingly, no accent. Okay, so are they a transplant from the Northeast?
No, they're not a transplant
from the Northeast. Where are they from, then? Those are the only people down here, so.
This area. No accent. This area, though. This particular person, fuck, this might be giving too much away, but this
then
particular
don't
person.
Don't do it.
No, fuck that.
Dude,
this particular
have a global
person
audience.
Drives a Cybertruck. So that kind of explains a lot more.
Oh, man. So they're just an all-around idiot. So you remember before when you were telling me you're working on your second degree and that makes you intelligent? No, it doesn't. It means you got two degrees.
Means you gamed the system twice.
It's good. It's a good baseline. It doesn't mean you're intelligent. But you are intelligent, buddy. You really
are. That guy's definitely parroting Elon because Elon made that comment because he says, like, He always goes on about how San Francisco is like a crime fueled like hellhole due to like the Democrats.
Oh my god!
But it was brought up specifically that it was Kamala Harris's fault, and I was like,
what the fuck could she possibly?
I don't understand how. But
I went
to
San Francisco, and I said you should probably go here and get shot in the chest. It's going to up your draft rating. Yeah, people are going to feel bad for you. And Joe Biden agreed. She just has that fucking didactic, just droning tone when she speaks publicly. But then you hear her speak like in candid situations, and she doesn't sound like that.
And she's fine.
Yeah, she sounds fine. So like, I don't have a problem with her voice anymore, even though I do have whatever, I can't remember what it's called, but. The thing where certain sounds just like make me want to tear through the wall, you know, like Kool-Aid Man out of the house. But yeah.
Mm.
Anyway, it's kind of hard not to vote for her because there's only one actual candidate running. So.
Yeah, and there's also the fact too that even if you're like a guy who's really big on Trump, like he might not live. There's a good chance he might not live through his second term, and J.D. Vance will become the president.
Yeah, yeah, and then we will have the Scarlet, or not Scarlet Letter, the Handmaid's Tale.
That's terrifying, because I've heard a lot of his positions, and I'm like, I really don't like this guy. Like,
he's awful. He might be the reason Trump loses, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Like, he might be, I think Trump was already going to lose, but and I won't be surprised if he doesn't, but I think it would be like a whole, it would have to be a disaster.
I think as much as people talk about how like how quote unquote bad like Kamala is and how she's a loser or whatever, like she's obviously not, because you know the most they can come up with to attack her is that they're like going through her background and saying
she's
like,
not
oh,
even
she's
black.
Yeah, they're saying she's not black. They're saying,
which
is like, oh,
hilarious.
She claims she worked at a McDonald's between college. We found no record of this.
Yeah, what's McDonald's? So dumb. Anyway, we're being too political, boys.
Speaking of being dumb.
We're going to be talking about the original himbo.
Oh, boy.
Oh,
Joe
shit.
Rogan.
Nah, man.
One.
Steve Reeves.
One J. Edgar Hoover.
Oh, no. All right, so boys, strap in for a 15-parter on this.
Don't talk about strap-ons when we're talking about J. Edgar Hoover, all right?
No, I talk about high heels and fishnets if I was talking about J. Edgar Hoover, okay?
So John Edgar Hoover was born on New Year's
Day. What am I guilty of? Having a good time?
The worst part was, God, if he was just so normal about it, right? And I understand the time he couldn't really be like quote unquote normal, but if he could just be cool with it, like, God damn, bro, you could.
Oh, it goes beyond that. And there's a lot of things which we'll talk about at the end. Like there's a big breakdown of like what was his sexual orientation and stuff like that. He was most definitely gay.
He was gay. Like, I feel like Dave Chappelle. Gay, gay, gay.
I thought he was Polish.
Well, like, he should have just embraced it, man. Shit. He could have been so cool if he just embraced it. Like, the first gay director of the FBI? Come on, man.
He was born on New Year's Day, 1895, in Washington, D.C., his parents were Anna Marie and Dickerson Naylor Hoover.
I'm sorry. What was that name for dad?
That was Dickerson
Naylor Hoover.
Naylor Hoover, which is like, man, it's like you're edging next to like insult, you know? You're just edging, like, you know something's there.
You just know that meme, you know, of the kid. Insult.
You know? Listen, popping up forehead. It's kind of like the LaCroix of names, you know, like it's real close to tasting like something.
The only time you will ever hear a name even remotely close to that is at like the most private and prestigious of elementary schools behind 6-foot brick walls with armed security. Like, these kids would be named Dickerson, Naylor, Hoover back there. Otherwise, no.
Yeah, actually, there is a person named Dickerson, Naylor, Hoover back there.
It's just New England back there.
From the New England back there. That's correct. Okay, so his dad was the LaCroix of vulgarity names.
And he was also the chief of the printing division of the United States Coast and Geodetic Survey. And was formerly a plate maker for the same organization.
A plate maker, okay.
Meaning he made like the printing press printing plates. He was of English and German ancestry. His maternal great uncle, John Hitz, was a Swiss honorary consul general to the United States. So among his family, Jay was closest to his mother, who, despite being, quote-unquote, inclined to instruction, showed great affection towards him. He was born in a house on the present site of Capitol Hill United Methodist Church, located on Seward Square near Eastern Market in Washington's Capitol Hill neighborhood. A stained glass window of the church is dedicated to him. He did not have a birth certificate filed upon his birth, although it was required in 1895 in Washington.
Oh, so he's not a real citizen then.
I think we need to have deported his ass.
Yeah.
Two of his siblings did have certificates, but his was not filed until 1938 when he was 43 years old. 1938. Yeah, he was 43 in 1938.
How imagine if you will, that he was not white, and then his name began with Buh and ended in Barack Obama.
How can you
mean Hussein the Islamic Shock Obama?
Look, dude, we know how you feel. All right.
How can you run the FBI without a birth certificate?
I mean, they didn't really look into things very well back then. It's kind of like how my great grandmother came to the country on like fake papers.
Talk about,
you promise this is real? You're not fucking with us? All
I guess
right,
we're past the statute of limitations there, huh?
Yeah, probably.
Well, she's dead.
Now you can never run for office because you're not from here, dude.
Yeah, like my grandmother was born in America and then my mother was born in America. I was born in America.
Every shit ass in this fucking country that like complains about that kind of stuff, like lineage, like descent and all that crap, it's just like, What is
those are the people who have no like standard, like good strong lineage. Like,
well, first of all, they all have some immigration status. Like their family does. Like if you if you investigate any of them, they're not unique in almost any way. They're not like uniquely American. Certainly,
never met anybody from a native tribe who has complained about anything like that before.
Yeah, it's so stupid.
Hoover lived his entire life in Washington, D.C.
Hoover!
He attended Central High School, where he sang in the school choir, participated in the Reserve Officers Training Corps program, and competed on the debate team.
Is that ROTC? Yeah, that's ROTC, yeah. Right?
I mean, it was like also like pre-World War I ROTC.
Man, I remember the ROTC kids that walked around Dr. Phillips High School for the year that I went there.
Just call them ROTC.
Man, bro, these kids were so fucking serious. It was not even funny. Like, they would march between classes with their little hats on. Every single one of them had the high and tight. Their like, they had the ribbons, the little fake guns, because this was, like, right before Columbine. So, like, they had little fake guns, and it was still kind of cool to walk around with it. Unreal. Those kids right there were like, we are going to, I guarantee you they were all in Afghanistan.
Hopefully they're still there. Oh shit. I didn't say that, did I? That wasn't me. That was somebody. Somebody came by the mic and just said it.
It's a drive-by.
Yeah, he just fucking ran through. Naked too. I don't know what the fuck that was about.
Hey, you get out of my house, strange naked man.
Yeah, how dare you denigrate certain members of our military? What's wrong with you?
During debates, Hoover argued against women getting the right to vote and against the abolition of the death penalty.
Wow, what a piece of shit.
The school newspaper applauded his quote-unquote cool, relentless logic.
Oops, okay.
He stuttered as a boy, which he later learned to manage by teaching himself to talk quickly, a style that he carried through his adult career. He eventually spoke with such a high speed that stenographers had difficulty following him.
Can you imagine the director of the FBI speaking like an auctioneer?
In front of Congress,
1 through 40, 10 to 20, 10 to 20, 20 to 20. And I'm going to say, I'm going to kill myself. I'll be here
for life. Life imprisonment, all right.
Hoover was 18 years old when he accepted his first job, an entry-level position as messenger in the Orders Department at the Library of Congress. The library was half a mile from his home. The experience shaped both both him and the creation of the FBI profiles, as Hoover noted in a 1951 letter. He said, quote unquote, "This job trained me in the value of collating material. It gave me an excellent foundation for my work in the FBI, where it has been necessary to collate information and evidence."
I'm allowed to listen to the radio at a reasonable volume.
I don't want to make like a joke about it, but sure, like, do. Is he kind of autistic? Like, before we had like autistic diagnoses, would he fit into that chart? Like,
was he on the spectrum?
Yeah,
probably. Most people are at some level.
Yeah, it
seems like.
Right. But was he like more than most people? Was he like a little bit more towards the middle? Like,
I just think he was a weird dude.
I've heard he was kind of like. Like light in the loafers. I've heard that.
That just means he's gay, which, whatever. Nobody cares about that, honestly. It's 2024. No, I don't care about that.
I meant that he was light on his feet. What the fuck's wrong with you? Why would I say that? Shit. Jesus.
That's what light in the loafers means.
Does it?
Yeah.
I always thought it was a compliment.
No, when someone says he's a little light in the loafers, it means that he's gay.
I know what it means. God damn it. Jesus.
Steve has to call some people. Apologize.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you're looking a little light in the loafers today.
Mate, you look spry. I don't know what your problem is.
Hoover obtained a Bachelor of Laws from the George Washington University Law School in 1916, where he was a member of the Alpha Nu chapter of the Kappa Alpha Order, a Southern fraternity that was born out of a desire to, quote unquote, carry on the legacy of the incomparable flower of Southern knighthood after the defeat of the Confederacy in 1865. So yes, he was in the Confederate cosplayer fraternity.
Oh my God.
That still exists to this day.
Shouldn't be surprised. I'm sorry. Well, the Alpha knew, yeah, right?
Yeah, Alpha knew.
Yeah.
My
Alpha Nu sounds like a guy, like an Egyptian guy from the neighborhood, you know? That's Alpha Nu over there.
My dad was in a fraternity, and some of his fraternity brothers stole the cannon from the Alpha Nus and threw it in the one lake that was by WVU.
Uh-huh. That's excellent.
That's how you do that. And
they had a showdown with them.
Good old-fashioned cannon stealing.
Some prominent Kappa Alpha alumni who had an influence on Hoover's future beliefs included author Thomas Dixon and John Temple Graves. Hoover graduated with an LLM in 1917 from the same university.
An LLM?
Yeah, it's a...
Is that like an MD-JD?
I've never heard
of it. It's essentially a master of laws, a magister... legum or legum magister.
Okay, so a master's in
yeah, law. Essentially a master's in law. He has like the I think he can't be a lawyer, but I could be wrong. I mean, okay. You just have to pass the bar to be a lawyer in a lot of cases.
No, yeah. You guys are way off here. I don't know where you're getting your fucking information anyway. LLM. There you go. Stands for Light in the Loafers, maybe. And he got it because he was very spry.
It was the predecessor to the presidential fitness test.
Yes. And he was spry because while all the other men were wearing slacks, he was wearing fishnets, which lightened
his. He had very powerful legs. Some referred to him as a power bottom.
So like, seriously, like, can you imagine if you were just like, I don't know, you went to like pick up someone and they're, you know, you're like, you and another dude are going to a party and you're giving him a ride and he goes, dude, I'll be right out. I got to find my slacks. What would you do?
I'd be like, all right, so get your pants, bro. Why don't your pants already on?
Your slacks?
Yeah.
I've never heard slacks referred to by women, by men.
That's dress pants, slacks.
Yeah, I've just never heard it. Like, I don't think I've heard
really?
It.
Really?
I don't think really? So, no.
I can't even say that it's like, maybe it's a Northeast thing, because you're from fucking Jersey. Like,
I don't know, dude. My brain's weird.
Okay. But yes, it's like male dress pants, basically, but not like, it's like suit pants, kind of like slacks like that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, kind of. I get it. I don't get it.
So, while he was a law student, Hoover became interested in the career of one Anthony Comstock, who was the New York City U.S. Postal Inspector, who waged prolonged campaigns against fraud, vice, and pornography, and birth control.
Give me a quick aside about the Comstock Act, because that sounds very familiar from high school. That just tickled my lizard brain. What was the Comstock Act?
It was essentially like the post office being able to, like, you couldn't send birth control through the mail, you couldn't send pornography through the mail. If they found that what you were selling or what you were sending through the mail could be considered pornographic or fell under the auspices of the Comstock Act, it would be seized, and then you would most likely face criminal charges.
So it's basically just you can't mail. The Comstock Act is basically saying you can't mail any of this stuff, basically.
Yeah, it's essentially saying because people were sending like birth control and stuff through the mail. And they wanted to put an end to that. Same with like pornography and other things.
I'm sitting here in 2024, like they're sending birth control through the mail. And okay, and
well, it's also the fact too that like a lot of the anti-abortion laws that states have, they come from the 19th century and they existed for a good reason. Because it wasn't done for puritanical reasons. It was done because a lot of the birth control methods used back then were like often fatal. If done incorrectly or if you didn't use the right amounts.
Wait, like the pills?
Well, it wasn't even like pills in a lot of cases. They were giving people like tonics and tinctures. They were giving people things that would induce abortions. the women were instructed to use like Lysol essentially, and like to like douche their vagina with
literal
it.
Donald Trump level.
I'm about to say. Cures.
I've heard people are even injecting the Lysol.
Inject Lysol and shiny UV light up your ass so you'll cure COVID.
And but the apologists that are just like, he didn't say that. That's not what he said. Shut the
He's
fuck
like in
up.
4K he saying
very
it.
Very clearly
up.
Said it. And he also very clearly thought it was a good fucking thing to say. Like a smart yeah. thing to say. Fucking yeah. dickhead.
But because though abortion was illegal, a lot of the reasoning was because during that time, medical science wasn't able to like safely, you know, like abort fetuses like we can today.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it was so. It was just more like a punch. That's where the term "Punch and Judy" show came from.
Jesus Christ!
Oh my God.
Hoover later on in life, as director of the FBI, would keep a large collection of pornographic material, possibly the world's largest at that time, of films, photographs, and written materials, with a particular emphasis on nude photos of celebrities.
Man, this guy.
My dude is getting ready for the blackmail of a century.
He was like the original, internet porn bro, right?
He allegedly had a naked picture of Eleanor Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Wait, how old was she? How old, though?
As like an adult. It wasn't like she was like in the bathtub. Not that they took pictures like that back then.
No. I mean, was she like in her 20s, 30s, or was she like in her 60s?
No, it was her when she was younger.
Okay. All right. Okay. I can kind of see that. I bet you Eleanor Roosevelt was a fox back in the day.
But he would reportedly use these for not only his own titillation, but also to blackmail people.
Yeah, I'm going to go with more blackmail than titillation for himself, buddy.
Immediately after getting his law degree, Hoover was hired by the Justice Department to work in the War Emergency Division. He accepted this clerkship on July 27, 1917, at the age of 22. The job at the time paid $990 a year, which was $23,500 in 2024 money.
He's a clerk. I'm not surprised.
And it also made him exempt from the draft.
Why?
Because he's in a war industry. He's like in a war division. He's essentially doing like intelligence work.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, because there was a thing too, like if you worked in a factory that was working on like war materials, a lot of times you'd be exempted from the draft. Like, for instance, my grandfather didn't have to go to Korea because he worked for General Electric in a war industry focused area. So it made it exempt from the draft.
Oh,
or to be called up to service, because most of the guys who went to Korea, like we've talked about, were veterans.
Yeah, right.
Soon after this, Hoover would become the head of the division's Alien Enemy Bureau, authorized by Woodrow Wilson at the beginning of the First World War to arrest and jail allegedly disloyal foreigners without trial. He would receive additional authority from the 1917 Espionage Act. Out of a list of 1,400 suspicious Germans living in the U.S., the Bureau arrested 98 and designated 1,172 as arrestable.
So, what did the Espionage Act say?
The Espionage Act just gave them wide powers to like arrest people who were accused of who are believed to be aiding the enemy.
Okay.
It's been amended a bunch of times. And it's essentially like if you're doing anything that would interfere with like the operation of the military or recruitment of people into the military. For instance, a lot of socialists were arrested under the Espionage Act.
Mm-hmm.
To give those idea of those who were charged with it, Eugene Debs was arrested under it. Emma Goldman, Alexander Berkman. And in the future, too, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, they were arrested under it.
Oh, wow.
Daniel Ellsberg was charged under it.
It's also where
Chelsea Manning was charged under it, as well as really? Julian Assange. Yeah.
Really? So it's but I mean, it gets very
little. I was talking about that shit earlier today because of I was talking about all the whistleblower people. And I was talking about because that one dude, in, I think it's North Florida, but he's the one that came out and basically whistle blew the idea to like turn a bunch of the fucking national forests and like parks in Florida into like golf courses.
Oh my God, dude.
Yeah, because they like, did that.
Theaters and shit. And they tried doing it under Rick Scott, and it was a really stupid idea and it didn't happen. And then DeSantis comes out with it. And then Rick Scott comes out and goes, dude, that's really stupid. Like, literally, Rick Scott comes out and says, I tried that. I was an idiot. And it gets slammed down. And then DeSantis is like, well, that was, yeah, I just wasn't really ready to go yet, you know, because he can't admit he was fucking wrong. But they just fired a guy who whistle blew the whole thing. That's the only reason it got out.
There was also the Sedition Act of 1918, which was like a lot broader.
He should get like fired, just, by the way, in my opinion.
For whistleblowing?
Yeah, because you can whistleblow, but you don't have any protections unless a crime was committed, I think. I'm not 100% sure how it works, but there has to be a crime. All he did was release private information about some, you know, internal thing.
Oh, glad he did.
I'm very happy that he did, but I'm saying, like, if you take that risk, you're done. And no one's going to commute him. Like, be like, you can have your job back. He worked for the state, and you released state data. You can't do that.
True. But,
plus, it would have got shot down anyway. What the fuck are you jumping
But the gun for? But the Sedition Act was repealed in 1920, and Warren G. Harding and Calvin Coolidge released all those convicted under the Sedition and Espionage Acts during their terms as president as well.
Yeah. What's the difference between treason and sedition, Steve?
Well, treason is when you do an actual like act to like attempt to like overthrow or betray the country. Right. It's rather broad, and it depends on the country and what it is. But sedition is generally just like undermining through speech or expression.
Oh, okay, yeah. Fuck that. That should not be illegal anywhere.
Like for instance, if you were like most like the leftist podcasters in America would have been arrested under the Sedition Act.
Absolutely. Dude, I've heard some terrible, terrible shit on the podcast.
But even just saying like you should not support like the war industries, or you should not, you know, you should boycott these things, or you should not, you know, be like pro like these US like war policies, just saying that was enough to get you like arrested under the Sedition Act.
Damn.
Doesn't treason require something like espionage too?
Well, it generally has to be like an act.
Gotcha. Okay, and it has to be like something helping a foreign power, right?
Yeah, doing something to help a foreign power for personal gain or political belief or whatever. It's rather broad, but it's essentially like betraying the country.
Gotcha. Okay.
In August 1919, Hoover, then 24 years old, became the head of the Bureau of Investigation's new General Intelligence Division, also known as the Radical Division, because its main goals were to monitor and disrupt the work of domestic radicals.
The tubular offices of the Radical Division.
Cowabunga, bro!
America's first Red Scare was beginning at this point, and one of Hoover's first assignments was to carry out the Palmer Raids. The Palmer Raids were a number of raids on just sort of on sort of like leftist organizations, communist organizations, stuff like that.
Oh, I was gonna say, I think I smoked Palmer Raids when I was like 20.
Like a familiar cigarette. You sure did.
And a lot of this was being done. They were also getting anarchists and also deporting them if they were not American citizens. And a lot of this was spurred on by the Russian Revolution. Hoover and his chosen assistant George Ruck monitored a variety of U.S. radicals. Their targets during this period included Marcus Garvey, Rose Pastor Stokes, and Cyril Briggs, Emma Goldman and Alexander Berkman, the future Supreme Court Justice Felix Frankfurter, who Hoover claimed was "quote unquote" the most dangerous man in the United States.
Get the fuck out of here. Guy named Frankfurter is going to be dangerous.
Felix Frankfurter was the most dangerous man in the United, and Gary Gabagool was
Jimmy
the second
Hot Dogs
most dangerous man.
Harry Hot Dogs Houdini.
Gary Gabagool and Barry Baloney. Listen,
Barry Baloney.
The twins right behind him, number two and three, the most dangerous people.
Nah, you're talking about what J. Edgar Hoover was doing. He was burying baloney. I think I'm at the limit now for gay jokes.
No, we're gonna keep this going.
It's not fair.
No, we're gonna keep this going.
Gay people, you're all good.
He was an evil person. And we should mock him for being evil.
Yeah, he's like Roy Cohn. In the sense that they were both sort of active in doing the same terrible things at the right time. Like John Waters had to tell guys that, like, I think it was like Fire Island or somewhere, telling them like yeah, don't sleep with Roy Cohn, he's a monster.
Oh my god. Yeah.
Because like Roy Cohn would throw like big parties.
Yeah.
And he would be like very giving with like the men that he was having relationships and stuff with like very, very few like strings attached. So of course like people wanted to like party with him. But it's also like, yeah, this guy is like, he ruined the lives of multiple, like many gay people, and he works for like the evilest men in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he's like the, shit, what the fuck's his name? Or I'm sorry, what's her name? Caitlyn Jenner.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Caitlyn Jenner. Like, Caitlyn Jenner's not a trans icon. Caitlyn Jenner's a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's gone like even crazier. In 1920, then 25-year-old Hoover was initiated as a Freemason at D.C.'s Federal Lodge Number 1 in Washington, D.C. He went on to join the Scottish Rite, in which he was made a 33rd degree Inspector General honorary in 1955.
Swear to God, that just sounds like all the shit you made up as a kid in the clubhouse. I'm a 33rd degree Inspector General honorary. What are you like? Come on, man. Stop.
I'm 33rd degree official. My force field blocks your laser.
it's literally grown men just playing like real life Dungeons and Dragons.
It's all about the pancake dinners.
Come on.
It's not really. I mean, I know a bunch about it. It's not really.
Yeah, the Dungeons and Dragons, like, one of the pancake dinners.
It is everything about the pancake breakfast. I don't know what the fuck bizarre
pancake
world you're
breakfast.
In where you have pancake dinners.
Okay. That multi is delicious, man. Try it. It'll change your life to have a pancake dinner.
Dude, I definitely had breakfast or dinner before. So I totally agree with you. But yeah, no, they do a lot of pancake breakfasts because, you know, there's no money and they have to pay their rent. So they're constantly having pancake breakfast.
Incredible.
In 1921, Hoover rose in the Bureau of Investigation to deputy head, and in 1924, the Attorney General made him the acting director. On May 10, 1924, then-President Calvin Coolidge appointed Hoover as the fifth director of the Bureau of Investigation, partly in response to allegations that the prior director, William J. Burns, was involved in the Teapot Dome scandal. Which I'm sure you all know because you were probably embroiled in it, like Milhouse was, you know, reading about the Teapot Dome scandal.
God, it's high school all over again.
But it was essentially a scandal where officers of the government within the Coolidge administration were selling the U.S.'s oil reserves for profit.
So this dude was 29 years old, and he was now heading up the FBI.
Yeah, my question is, why don't you own a house now?
Appointed by the president. That's insane.
Just that Michael Scott picture, but, you know, just more awkward because it's J. Edgar Hoover. When Hoover took over the Bureau of Investigation, it had approximately 650 employees, including 441 special agents. Hoover fired all female agents and banned the future hiring of them.
Jesus Christ, Jay.
Hoover was sometimes unpredictable in his leadership of the agency. He would frequently fire bureau agents, singling out those he thought, quote unquote, looked stupid, like truck drivers, or whom he considered, quote unquote, pinheads.
What?
What the hell?
Is that like one of them like 1920s like insults? Like, yeah, a pinhead. See, like, is that like?
The dumb. It
essentially means they look like dumb. Yeah, they look stupid.
Because their top of their head is about the size of a pin, which is small, which would imply a tiny, tiny brain.
See? Unreal. Unreal.
Yep. Just more phrenology. Or what is it? The study of heads?
Yeah, phrenology.
Yeah.
The shape and curvature of the skull. Having the sloping brow of an ignoramus. He would also relocate agents who displeased him to career-ending assignments and locations. One such example was Melvin Purvis. He was one of the most effective agents in capturing and breaking up gangs in the 1930s. It is alleged that Hoover maneuvered him out of the Bureau because he was envious of the substantial public recognition Purvis was receiving.
So he was a catty bitch.
Well, yeah, because remember, it's like his FBI, and like they would have like a radio show, and it was like the files of like J. Edgar Hoover's FBI,
which is kind of anti-American because it's not your fucking FBI, dude. It's our FBI.
In December 1929, Hoover oversaw the protection detail for the Japanese naval delegation who were visiting Washington D.C. on their way to attend negotiations for the 1930 London Naval Treaty. The Japanese delegation was greeted at Washington Union Station by U.S. Secretary of State Henry L. Stimson and the Japanese ambassador Katsuji Dabuchi. The Japanese delegation then visited the White House to meet with President Herbert Hoover. In the early 1930s, criminal gangs were carrying out a large number of bank robberies in the Midwest.
This is my favorite time period in the United States if we're talking about crime. Is the early 30s where you got like the Barker Gang, you got like Pretty Boy Floyd, you got John Dillinger, like you got the heavy hitters in American crime. This is my shit right here. I love back, this.
Back when you could hide out, and I think it was Milwaukee.
Yes.
I think Milwaukee was like a place where if you were a criminal, as long as you didn't commit any crimes there.
St. Paul. Because it was one of the twin cities. Yeah.
It was, hey, it was St. Paul.
Ryan's been in Milwaukee for a minute.
No, I'm good at Milwaukee. It was St. Paul, where basically if you were like a gangster, if you were wanted, the cops wouldn't fuck with you. As long as you just lay low and you basically kind of like quote unquote paid money, you were safe. Like you had police protection.
These gangs would use their superior firepower and fast getaway cars to elude local law enforcement and avoid arrest.
These cars went 30 miles an hour. It's fucking crazy. These cars are doing like four feet can't even run fast enough to keep up.
These cars are doing like 80, 90 miles an hour. And like you gotta understand that like these big V8s were still brand new. These rickety ass skinny tires on these cars, like the insane danger of driving these cars at even like 40 or 50 down a dirt road is kind of insane. But like you got people that are doing, you know, 90 miles an hour down a dirt road trying to get away from the cops, which understandable, but that takes balls in those busted ass cars.
Yeah.
Many of these criminals frequently made newspaper headlines across the United States, notably John Dillinger, who became famous for leaping over bank cages and repeatedly escaping from jails and police traps.
And as retold in the songs of Dillinger Escape Plan, if you can make out the lyrics.
Didn't Johnny Depp play him in a movie?
I think so.
Or am I crazy? Well, I'm
John Dillinger? Probably. He's played a lot of fuckers.
The robbers, though, because they operate across state lines, Hoover pressed to have their crimes recognized as federal offenses so that he and his men would have the authority to pursue them and get the credit for capturing them. Initially, the Bureau suffered embarrassing foul-ups, in particular with Dillinger and his conspirators.
Mm-hmm.
A raid of a summer lodge in Manitowish waters, Wisconsin, called Little Bohemia, left a federal agent and a civilian bystander dead and others wounded. All the gangsters escaped.
Bonnie and Clyde, that's who I was thinking of earlier, was Clyde Barrow, his driving skills with those fucking big V8s and while also shooting guns out at the cops while like kind of in high speed chases. This shit's wild to think what was going on in this country, and they just kind of got away with it for the longest time.
Didn't they all die young?
most of them.
They didn't get away with
I mean, look at the car.
You know what I mean? Oh, yeah, yeah. Look at the car that they got. They got fucking clapped in. It's not good. You can tell. Listen, if you look at the car that Bonnie and Clyde were killed in, I'm just going to say like this. Those cops were tired of their shit. They were like, we're going to fucking end you right now.
Reload, just some boys.
Respect, boy.
Give them some more.
Just some respect, boy. That's Bonnie and Clyde's car.
There's still some untainted metal over there. I need you to put holes in it. Holes, boys.
Hoover, though, realized his job was on the line, and he pulled out all the stops to capture the culprits. In late July 1934, Special Agent Melvin Purvis, who I mentioned earlier, the director of operations in the Chicago office, received a tip on Dillinger's whereabouts that paid off when Dillinger was located, ambushed, and killed by Bureau agents outside the Biograph Theater.
Kind of fucked up that that's how they did my boy Johnny, but hey, you gotta do what you gotta do to get the criminals.
Hoover was credited for overseeing several highly publicized captures or shootings of outlaws and bank robbers. These included Machine Gun Kelly in 1933, Dillinger in 1934, and Alvin Karpis in 1936, which led to the Bureau's powers being broadened.
I'm just saying, if you lock up Machine Gun Kelly in 2024, I got no problem with it.
Yeah, and Alvin Karpis was part of the Ma Barker gang.
In 1935, the Federal Bureau of the Bureau of Investigation was renamed the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Because they were purchased by Microsoft.
Yeah.
So Microsoft couldn't keep the regular name. They turned to Microsoft Azure Bureau of Investigation.
With the name change also came a large amount of restructuring. Hoover visited the lab of Canadian forensic scientist Wilfred DeRome twice in 1929 and 1932 to plan the foundation of his own FBI laboratory in the USA.
I'm really kind of disappointed with this country, with what we believe is actually possible in terms of forensics versus what we can actually do with forensics. And I blame it directly on TV shows like CSI, which admittedly I used to love when I was younger, like the OG CSI. I used to love that stupid
show. Yeah, it's stupid fun. I mean, but even as a kid, we knew they were full of shit. Out of it's really the actual boomer generation or like the generation after that like thought they were being serious.
Yeah, but I mean, like, we're coming to find out things like even, you know, bite marks and dental impressions are not based in science at all. Whatsoever.
Yeah. No, of course not. They're based in dentistry. It's not science.
During the 1930s, Hoover persistently denied the existence of organized crime, despite numerous organized crime shootings as mafia groups struggled to control their lucrative profits deriving from illegal alcohol sales during Prohibition.
There's no such thing as organized crime.
He denied that organized crime existed?
Yeah, and later for control of prostitution, illegal drugs, and other criminal enterprises.
He denied all that happened?
Well, he denies that it was that there was a criminal conspiracy within, like, the mafia. He just thinks it's all, you know, separate.
Just random. Wow. Okay.
Look, Johnny Ragu and Kelly Ragazzi over here, you know, they're
Sam Trafficante. Listen, we eventually need to do a series on, like, the mob, or at least some, like, big players in the mob.
Yeah, it's been done.
Hoover brings out, like, a phrenology head, and he starts going on about how the mind of the Italian is incapable of, like, organizing at that level.
Oh, my God.
Capo? No, that's simple Italian mind.
They just built Rome. Fucking asshole.
Many writers believe Hoover's denial. You know,
the city that still exists.
You know, the whole thing which is all roads lead to?
There are still buildings there. Buildings, I say.
Many writers believe his denial of the mafia's existence and his failure to use the full force of the FBI to investigate it were due to mafia gangsters Mayor Lansky and Frank Costello's possession of embarrassing photographs of Hoover in the company of his protege, FBI Deputy Director Clyde Tolson.
Frank Costello's my favorite.
That's the guy from Shameless. That's the guy from Shameless, isn't it?
He's got the single best, like court photo just ever.
He looks like, am I thinking of Tommy Lee Jones in that picture? Like, Tommy Lee Jones would play him perfectly.
Costello?
Yeah.
He was the
picture where he's kind of like grilling the camera.
Costello's like the Godfather. Like,
yeah, I'm trying to think who would play him. He looks like somebody like maybe Tommy Lee Jones
that Paul we could Sorvino. Play him really well. I could say,
yeah, yeah.
He's dead now.
Other writers believe that Costello had corrupted Hoover by providing him with horse racing tips passed through a mutual friend, gossip columnist Walter Winchell. Mm-hmm. Hoover had a reputation as a quote-unquote inveterate horse player and was known to send special agents to place $100 bets for him.
He was a brony?
And
the world's original, the federal brony institution.
Well, yeah, it's like if you're a male, that one like meme, like if you're a male, the two paths, if you're a male brony, and it was like fascism or becoming trans.
Oh my god.
Hoover once said the bureau had quote unquote much more important functions than arresting bookmakers and gamblers.
Oh wait, Paul Sorvino did play Costello.
Good call.
Look at that photo. Fucking badass.
I think the funniest thing is like recently that
wooden matches. It just makes me respect you more, you know?
Listen, the funniest thing and the whole reason I believe it is kind of like everything is just random in the universe is that within the last few years, or maybe it was during COVID, that like mafia guy that just got fucking shot by the kid in New York, like that random ass kid, and just and killed him.
Yeah, the QAnon guy.
Yeah, like you got this giant, like, and now like you got like just fight, like theoretically, you got some like Frank Costello, some just random person just walk up, just kill you. You are Frank Costello. You could touch anybody, probably in the continental United States, you could kill him just on a word.
Yeah,
and just some random person comes up and just ends you.
Just ends like, Frank Cali. Yeah,
it's wild to think that things could just kind of the dominoes could fall. That's like
Gambino's
that.
Too, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Although Hoover built the reputation of the FBI arresting bank robbers in the 1930s, his main interest had always been communist subversion, and during the Cold War, he was able to focus the FBI's attention on these investigations. From the mid-1940s through the mid-50s, he paid little attention to criminal vice rackets such as illegal drugs, prostitution, extortion, and as mentioned before, flatly denied the existence of the mafia in the United States. In the 1950s, evidence of the FBI's unwillingness to investigate the mafia became a topic of public criticism. After the Appalachian meeting of crime bosses in 1957, Hoover could no longer deny the existence of a nationwide crime syndicate.
The Appalachian meeting? What is that?
That's where they all got together in Appalachia and they got busted because they noticed all the cars coming into Appalachia.
They noticed a whole bunch of Lincoln Continentals coming in there.
Yeah, it's upstate New York. It's where they all got busted. Like every major mob figure who was like went to that.
Really?
Yeah. It's fucking crazy.
Did somebody snitch that it was going down or something?
Well, sort of. I mean, I think if I remember correctly, what happened was that they saw all these cars coming in and called the police, and then the police found out that there were like all these people going to this one location, and then that got filtered out somehow. I could be wrong, but I think that's what happened.
Yeah, I think despite Hoover, you know, not putting like wanting to put it all together, I think the people also watching a lot of these like mob bosses, and then they noticed and probably talked amongst themselves like that these guys are like all heading to a location that's not like a place they normally go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because there were some weird places, like the mob was very heavy in. Like there's some places in the Midwest that you would never think. Like, I think it's
Kansas City.
There's like Kansas City was like a big mob area. I think it wasn't also Lincoln, Nebraska, or something like that.
Yeah.
I've heard about Nebraska. Yeah,
either that or like somewhere like that's Omaha, a state,
right? Nebraska.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's mostly corn, but yeah. And also on top of this too. Cosa Nostra's control of the many branches of the syndicate operating criminal activities throughout North America prevailed this as well and was heavily reported on in popular newspapers and magazines. Hoover, in response to this, created the quote-unquote top hoodlum program, And went after the syndicate's top bosses throughout the country.
Sounds like a TV show that'd be on now. You know, top hoodlum.
Hoover, though, was concerned about what he claimed was subversion under his leadership.
By Tracy Morgan.
It'd be on Spike TV.
Yeah.
I'm Tracy Morgan.
Somebody's going to be pregnant when I leave.
Welcome to the Top Hoodlum program.
Somebody's leaving here pregnant.
My son was a top hoodlum. I'd kill
him. We just watched a comedy, like a Cassie, or my wife was watching some comedy stuff, like documentaries. There's one on Tracy Morgan. It's crazy.
Hoover, though, he was concerned about what he claimed was subversion, and under his leadership, they the FBI investigated tens of thousands of suspected subversives and radicals.
Yeah,
according to critics, obviously, Hoover tended to exaggerate the dangers of these alleged subversives and many times overstepped his bounds in his pursuit of eliminating this perceived threat.
Wait, you mean he wasn't, like, completely on the up and up? Is that what you're trying to say?
I don't believe it.
I was under the impression that he did everything, like, you know, by the book.
He's director of the FBI. He would have to, right?
Yeah,
you know, because you just take, like, the person, like, the relative, you know, who's, like, a crazy right-winger and thinks, like, it says, like, you know, like, Joe Biden is a communist. And then you put him in charge of the FBI.
Like,
hey, listen, don't make jokes about it. RFK is going to be running the HHS soon.
Allegedly, I'm going to leave the campaign, and I'm just going to let I'm going to put my weight behind Donald Trump, and my wife's going to leave me.
Hey, listen, quick, going back, Frank Costello would be played by Kevin Spacey, and it would be perfect, as disgusting as the person as Kevin Spacey is.
Yeah.
In that picture, Kevin Spacey. Look at it again.
God, I fucking hate Kevin Spacey. This is going to sound very vain. I hate Kevin Spacey, not for what he did. Like, I hate him for that as much as I hate him for the fact that he fucked up House of Cards, because I was really waiting for that show to finish.
Show, bro.
And then I heard he did some dumb shit, like, because he obviously had to leave the show because he's a piece of shit. But
so they switched it to his wife.
And then they, like, kill him off in the show. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Like, that's not where the show was going.
Not at all.
Fuck off.
But if you look at that courtroom photo, Kevin Spacey is who I was thinking of originally when I was looking at him.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Like a Nicolas Cage.
Hoover's obsession was such that William G. Hunley, a Justice Department prosecutor, joked that Hoover's investigations had actually helped the American communist movement survive, as Hoover's quote-unquote informants were nearly the only ones that paid the party dues.
Interesting.
Due to the FBI's aggressive targeting, by 1957, Communist Party USA membership had dwindled to less than 10,000, of whom some 1,500 were informants for the FBI. The FBI, though, investigated rings of German saboteurs and spies starting in the late 1930s and had primary responsibility for counter-espionage.
Oh, here we go. Good stuff.
The first arrests of German agents were made in 1938 and continued throughout World War II.
1938.
The Korn affair during World War II was one that we discussed previously, where German U-boats sent two small groups of Nazi agents ashore in Florida and on Long Island to cause acts of sabotage within the country.
Is that related to Operation Pistorius? Is that the same thing?
Yeah, it was all Pistorius. Part of that.
Like, is like an umbrella type thing?
You know, the guy that shot his girlfriend with the blade legs?
Yeah, the Olympic runner with the little tink-tink.
The two teams were apprehended after one of the agents contacted the FBI and told them everything. He was also charged and convicted. During the time period, then-President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, out of concern over Nazi agents in the United States, gave, quote-unquote, qualified permission to wiretap persons, quote-unquote, suspected of subversive activities. He went on to add in 1941 that the United States Attorney General had to be informed of its use in each case.
That's incredible that they could wiretap.
FDI.
The Attorney General, Robert H. Jackson, I left it to Hoover to decide how and when to use wiretaps, as he found, quote-unquote, the whole business distasteful.
What's his name? Robert Ace Jackson.
Ooh, yeah.
I am for real.
Jackson's successor at the post, as Attorney General Francis Biddle, did turn down Hoover's request on occasion.
Oh, on occasion, when it was convenient and like he wasn't afraid of losing his job or something?
Now look, J. Edgar, now we can't be doing that, all right?
Can't do it all the time. I'll let this one time slide. I'll wiretap this one person for you, but I can't do it all the time.
Look, I just want FDR's underwear.
In the late 1930s as well, FDR not only gave Hoover the task to investigate both, not only to investigate foreign espionage, but also to investigate domestic communists and fascists in the United States.
The FBI just has way too broad of a scope. Like, we'll just say scope of practice. Back in the 30s, they could just do whatever the fuck they wanted to do. It's kind of like when the CIA kind of first got implemented. They just did whatever the fuck they wanted to do.
That's also why they have like the church. They had the church committee because they'd just gone too far.
Yeah.
The FBI also participated in what was then the Venona Project. This was a pre-World War II joint project with the British to eavesdrop on Soviet spies in the UK and the United States. They did not initially realize that espionage was being committed, but the Soviets' multiple uses of one-time pad ciphers, which were a single use and unbreakable, created redundancies that allowed some intercepts to be decoded. These established that espionage was being carried out.
I'm sorry, would you say what kind of cipher?
A one-time pad cipher.
So what is this?
It's essentially that the agents are given a like one-time usable like essentially form on a pad, and that when they get the numbers through like a numbers channel or some other radio broadcast, they use that as the key to unlock what the message is.
Yeah, it's a well-known.
They're still used today. Yeah, the Cubans use them.
Yeah.
The thing, though, that the Soviets had an issue with, and it came back to, like seriously damage them during World War II, is that they got lazy with the pads, and sometimes they would reuse them.
Yeah, and you can't do that, because the fucking definition is one-time pad. Like, seriously, that's literally just as bad as, like, a woman reusing her pads. You know what I mean? Like, that's what that is. It's spoiled. It cannot be used again. So stupid. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, don't reuse your fucking passwords.
Hoover, though, kept the intercepts, which he considered America's greatest counterintelligence secret, in a lock safe in his office. He chose not to inform President Truman, Attorney General J. Howard McGrath, or Secretaries of State Dean Acheson and General George Marshall while they held office. He informed the Central Intelligence Agency of the Monona Project in 1952. This is also the project that, like, busts, like, Kim Philby.
Who?
Kim Philby was, like, Kim Philby was, like, this, like, high-ranking, like, MI6, like, agent. Like, when they talk about, like, Tinker Tailor, like, soldier spy, like, that's sort of based on, like, Kim Philby, where he was, like, this, where he was, no, he was just, like, a double agent, and he was also the one who was, like, put in charge of, like, finding, like, Soviet moles as well.
And he's it was a double like agent in charge of trying to find double agents.
Yeah, that they kept promoting him, and he and like he did a lot of damage. Like he gave over agents to the Soviets. He was feeding them intelligence. He was involved with them getting the atomic bomb. You know, I think he was also involved in putting Fuchs, the Soviet spy, in the Manhattan Project there.
That's wild. I would watch this movie of the week on this guy.
But he was there's a couple other things, but he was like. Him fighting it was like this huge like scandal.
And who was this guy? What was his name?
Kim Philby.
Kim Philby.
And he escaped to the Soviet Union, and he mostly lived out the rest of his life under house arrest because he died in 1988. And the Soviets like never really like let him like leave his apartment pretty much.
Oh, he's British. Yeah, no wonder he's a piece of shit. I mean.
But he got an early warning that he was about to get like exposed, and he defected in 1963 when this all sort of came out. And like I said, he lived in like he lived under essentially like house arrest in the Soviet Union because most like the KGB and stuff were suspicious of people who were like true believers in communism who were from Western countries because they lived through at that period. Most of them had lived through Stalin and they're just what the fuck is wrong with you? And then the other part is that they obviously don't trust somebody who betrayed their own country. So they're not just going to let you, because they had also lied to him and told him that he was like a colonel in like the KGB and stuff. That they said that he held a rank and all these other things. Then when he got there, they're like, no, you don't have any of that.
Who told you this, comrade? They lied to you. You are, proletariat.
After World War II, though, Hoover advanced plans to create a quote-unquote worldwide intelligence service. These plans, though, were shot down by the Truman administration. Truman objected to the plan, and emerging bureaucratic competitors opposed the centralization of power inherent in the plans, and there was a considerable aversion to creating what some viewed as an American version of the Gestapo.
I would hope there would be a considerable aversion to that.
In 1946, Attorney General Tom Sequard authorized Hoover to compile a list of potentially disloyal Americans who might be detained during a wartime national emergency.
Potentially.
Just in case list.
Well, no, the potentiality of the list is not in question. The list of these are people who we think might be an issue during like World War III. Like these people are to be immediately rounded up and arrested.
Just so that they're not like a problem while we're trying to not get our asses nuked by the Soviets.
Yeah, it's like World War I, where it's like yeah, these guys are left leaning or socialists or anarchists or anti war or whatever. And it's like we need to put these people in prison while the war goes on because they're going to do something that could possibly lower morale. Not that it matters in the case of World War III. I guess at this point it's still possible because.
Dude, at this point, World War III, if it was ever like a traditional world war like we're thinking of, it would be over so fast because of nukes. It would be
By 1950, if the Soviet bombers did suicide runs, they could hit DC. Because that was one of the things too, is that like in standard, like because American war planning generally goes on the thing that the enemies are us essentially, mm-hmm. and that they think like us and they operate like us. It's one of the reasons why. Like a lot of the projections for World War III had like the Soviets like steamrolling over Central Europe because they believed that there would be a amount of like automation and machinery use with their military in order to move supplies and like ready things like the U.S. military has right. that they would be able to move that fast. But we know from the war in Ukraine that the Soviet forces were most definitely not able to move that fast.
Because with the modern Russian army, yeah, it was nothing. Yeah, they had nothing.
Well, it wasn't just smoke and mirrors. It was just them not considering the fact that like they do not have the level of like equipment that the U.S. does and the level of automation. So you can't really go with that. Yeah. And it was sort of the thing too that there was sort of a belief that Soviet bombers would not be able to attack D.C. or areas like that because. It would be like a suicide mission because they would not be able to return back to the Soviet Union. But obviously, they're probably going to do the suicide mission.
Must be you're talking about a country of people who are just like, fuck it, yeah, let's do it.
In 1950, at the outbreak of the Korean War, Hoover submitted a plan to President Truman to suspend the writ of habeas corpus and detain 12,000 Americans suspected of disloyalty.
How much do you want to bet that Hoover referred to Korea as Korea? You know what I mean? You're like old people. I was in Korea.
You know how he referred to the people of Vietnam.
Like I'm good as far as like you telling me, because I know.
With a soft G.
Stop it.
But Hoover, though, in 1956, was becoming increasingly frustrated by U.S. Supreme Court decisions that limited the Justice Department's ability to prosecute people for their political opinions, most notably communists. Some of his aides reported that he purposely exaggerated the threat of communism to, quote-unquote, ensure financial and public support for the FBI. At the time, he formalized a covert dirty tricks program under the name COINTELPRO.
Oh, man, there it is.
COINTELPRO,
this is all coming together. When are we going to bring into MKUltra into this?
I mean, MKUltra was a CIA program.
Yeah, you know really. That the God, get Fed, it together. You know the FBI had to have something to do with it, though.
Nah. At the time, they really didn't communicate at all.
Yeah, even till the government essentially had made them, they didn't.
I get what you're saying, but like, yeah, they were like the CIA and the FBI were notoriously like opposite ends of goals.
I mean, okay. I feel like the FBI isn't like...
It was part of the reason 9/11 happened.
Well,
part of the reason 9/11 happened. So even in 2001,
those agencies
weren't communicating with each other at a level I'm going to finish my sentence, fucker. Where we could get like the basic intelligence that we needed moved around enough to stop one of the greatest tragedies in the history of the United States. Like... All they had to do was communicate, and they fucking didn't.
I'll give you that. I'm not going to say that all they had to do was communicate, but I'll give you that if had they communicated, there would have been a much better.
Well, no. My answer to that is that Hoover's not going to go in on some stupid thing like MKUltra because like where they're talking about like we're gonna use these drugs and we're gonna wipe the minds of people and then we're gonna rebuild them into perfect like assassins.
Yeah.
And it's like Hoover just has people like just has the police murder people. Like the police murdered Fred Hampton and it's like all under the auspices of the FBI. They're just gonna tell some cop like, yeah, grease that guy.
So you're saying
and they're gonna do it.
You're saying I can make doom like weirdo ghost killers, but where's the porn? Like, do I get porn from this?
God, I forgot all about Fred Hampton and the feds clapping him in his own house.
Unbelievable.
They're just gonna say like, oh yeah, they resisted and we shot him, and it's sad and tragic that it happened, but
all the officers like are gonna get paid leave and everybody will forget about it a week from now. Oh God, yeah. Holy shit.
An episode on all those like civil rights like disasters by law enforcement.
The pictures were why I didn't give a fuck when they burned down that Minnesota precinct. I was like, have you seen the neighborhood after the MOVE bombing? You think I give a shit about your little precinct? Get out of here.
So bad.
I think because obviously they didn't they didn't like deserve it to happen, obviously. But I always thought the funniest commentary on that was like, I think it was Chapo was talking about it, and they're just like, yeah, they were pretty annoying, but you don't deserve that to happen to them.
No.
Like, they were, like, the most obnoxious, like hippie cult.
Yeah, and then I'm not even like, getting up. Like, no, I don't think anyone's getting up for them, maybe, unless they're just stupid liberal, you know, like, way too left. But
no one's mad for them. Everyone's mad because the cops did it to a neighborhood.
And they shouldn't. They shouldn't even have that authority.
And I remember too that apparently like John Waters was obsessed with the one white woman who was in the group. He wanted to do like a movie about her because he's like, I wonder what her story is.
Forget about his story. What's her story?
Well, that was right around the time of Patty Hearst too, wasn't it?
That was in the 60s, right?
No, yeah, the MOVE bombing was in the 80s, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so Patty Hearst was a little bit before.
Yeah, Patty Hearst was like in 68, I think.
Okay. I don't know when the MOVE bombing was. I just know it was.
Stop
I thought it was
moving
the 60s.
MOVE bombing around in your head. You're moving it too far away.
But COINTELPRO was first used to disrupt the Communist Party USA. Where Hoover ordered observation pursuit of targets that range from suspected citizen spies to larger celebrity figures such as Charlie Chaplin, whom he saw as spreading Communist Party propaganda.
Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah he was a big time communist.
Okay.
Steve Martin talks about in his autobiography that he dated a girl in his like 20s. Mm-hmm. And she was, she wasn't Charlie Chaplin's daughter, but she was like, she was the daughter of one of the other people who were like part of like the Hollywood like blacklist. And that, like, he got to meet, like, Charlie Chaplin and stuff. Like,
Steve Martin got to meet Charlie Chaplin?
Yeah.
Charlie Chaplin's like when he got banger political rants in some of, like, his later movies.
Like, The Dictator and...
Oh, The Dictator's amazing.
But, gentlemen, we'll stop there and we'll pick up next time going into COINTELPRO. The '60s, and then and then talk about J. Edgar's sexuality.
We kind of already started. If you've been listening to it, you've kind of probably got an idea of what
he I'm not down. Really sure. You know, like I feel bad because I would never want to be in a position where like I demonize someone who's who's gay. But when you're a closeted like.
So nobody is demonizing him for being gay.
Yeah.
Nobody's demonizing him for being gay. Let's make sure that we are clear about that.
I think it's healthy to have that apprehension. You know what I mean?
Well, so yeah.
It's
not
careful about it, you know?
It's not because he's not evil because he's gay. He's evil because he's evil.
Of course
evil.
Not. No. Of course
not. But part of the thing, too, is that he would use persecute homosexuals through, like, the lavender scare and stuff like that.
Right.
Like people, it was illegal. Well, one, it was illegal to be gay, and two, like it was essentially like in the military, it would destroy your life if you were in the federal government, and they found out you were gay, like you would lose everything, because they believed, so like, oh, if you're gay, like foreign spies could use that against you to get information.
Yeah, like the mafia and gay jazz clubs,
Yeah. And it's like, well,
how would they do that? Where they just whip out a really fat penis and you just lose your mind and just tell them all the national secrets? Is that how it worked?
They
would just say, we'll release the fact that you are gay and it's illegal at the time. But on top of that, well, was it illegal in the United States at the time?
Yeah, it was. Well, it was.
It wasn't illegal in the United States. It was illegal in Britain until like 1963 or something.
Well, no, in most states it was illegal until like the 90s, in some states.
But it wasn't. It wasn't illegal to be gay. It was sodomy.
It was illegal? It was illegal to carry out homosexual acts.
Right.
And there were other things too, like
so you can be gay, you just can't touch nobody.
Right.
Well, like for instance,
can't hold hands.
Like for instance, it was illegal in New York and in a lot of states. For you to cross dress, like and for New York, for instance, you had to have there was like a quota of like how many things you had to wear that were like clothing. No, like how many clothing articles you were wearing that belonged to your gender.
Oh,
and that the majority of them had to be whatever your assigned gender was. If not, you could be arrested.
And isn't that how they did? Well, isn't how they did some of that too? Was if you were a really shitty cop, you would be like, "All right, earrings, that's two." Instead of being like a pair of earrings is one, you'd be like, "All right, one earring, one earring."
They're at the mercy. They're at the mercy of these like shitty cops that would like shake down the clubs. Like if the mob didn't pay like the protection money or whatever, or like for whatever reason, the mayor or whoever is in charge of the sends them down there. Sends them down to like shake down the club, like the police. That's why like the Stonewall riot happened.
Right.
And it's just and it's like they just sort of prey on these people, and oftentimes too, they would rape these people. They would force them to like give them like oral sex, or like they would, sodomize them.
Bro.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
year was that law in New York?
This was like in the 60s. I don't think it. I don't know when it got repealed, but it was brought up during a discussion of like Stonewall, and also talking about like Harvey Milk, and
they were doing things like beating and assaulting homosexuals in like in detention as recent as like the 90s and the 2000s. Like, yeah, I vividly remember a story of a black dude that they had in there and something about some items. And I was just like, this is beyond the pale of what you could even consider reason. Like, I mean, obviously, like, not reasonable, but like, it's even like anything you could even consider reasonable.
I mean, it's you can still use like the gay or trans panic defense in like a lot of states and get away with murder. And it still happens today. People still do it. It happened in Florida multiple times this year.
What? This year?
What are you talking
about? I'm pretty sure it happened this year. I know it happened last year that a trans woman was killed in Miami, and the guy's defense was that when he found out that they were trans or whatever, that he like lost control and like killed them.
Oh yeah, that's pretty. That actually is pretty common. It's terrible. It's pretty bad.
And the fact that still works.
His shot, bro. That's him shooting his shot.
How do you? Never mind.
That's all he had, dude. He's a complete idiot. That's all he had.
This will be another half hour discussion if I ask the question of how the fuck do you try to use that as your. Never mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're already delaying the podcast one day, so you know you can't be delaying.
I know. So until next time.
The only reason I'm still talking right now is because I'm. All right. Good night.
All right. Later.
Bye.